White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Gentlemen and students of the International Jew, thank you for being with us for episode 69 on the 17th day of October, 2013. I'm Carolyn Yeager.
And I'm Hadding Scott.
And so, Hadding, we're at the final chapter in this, what I'm calling the trilogy, it's not really, but it's the third one, on Jews in the liquor business, and this time we're focusing on Prohibition, which was from 1920 to 1933. I had to look that up today to be sure. I was kind of surprised me how long it went on because I didn't have a clear idea of it. And reading about Prohibition, it strikes me again that it is so sad how we are manipulated into things so easily. And, you know, this is what I'm seeing again and again. And we really can blame others to a degree. We can blame Jews for what they're doing and so on, but we really have to look at why we are such gullible people. I'm going to bring that up in a few spots during the course of this reading tonight. Any comments?
Well, yeah,
on that?
That's a point that Revelo Oliver made in one of his speeches back in the 60s. I think it was called "Can Liberals Be Educated?" Said that the liberal... He was still talking about liberals at that point. The liberal con artist needs a suitable, you know, victim, because not just anybody is going to fall for the game that he's playing. You have to be in some way gullible in order to fall for it.
That's right. Yeah, I used to be gullible. It's taken most of my life to get out of so much gullibility. And, you know, I wasn't stupid either. So, you know, it's this gullibility. I know a lot of people right now I can mention who I think they're often gullible about a lot of things. I wouldn't mention their name, but they're well-known people. So there you go. I think that's a real problem that we have. Anyway, you can begin anytime if you're ready.
Well, I want to say I think one of the things that helped the Germans very much in overcoming this trustingness was the fact that they led the world in studying other cultures and getting a broader perspective on human behavior. You know, they mm-hmm. they knew how, you know, people apart from Germans thought and lived, you know. So I think that was probably a major factor, the fact that Germans studied anthropology and psychology more than anybody else.
Starting with the National Socialist period, or do you
in
mean...
In the 19th century there. And probably
yeah, that's
before.
Right.
Even in the medieval period, Germans were psychologists in certain ways. If you read the original medieval version of Tristan... When he's old, there's a lot of psychologizing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this is chapter 64. The Jewish element in bootlegging evil. A student of the liquor industry of the United States is left.
I think it's liquor history. Do they have it
different? Liquor history. I bet that combination of words doesn't appear anywhere else.
Yeah, usually it's liquor industry. You're so right.
A student of the liquor history of the United States is left wondering not that prohibition came, but that the authorities ever allowed matters to go so far as to compel the people to take the issue into their own hands. That is the point where those who believe in personal liberty and those who believe in public safety ought to meet each other.
Well, you know, I thought it asked right here, you know, of course they talk a little bit more about this, but between public liberty and public safety, which would you choose as being the more important?
In reality, almost everybody will choose safety over liberty.
Well, that's right. And because I would. If it's a question, yeah.
In practice, if you're not safe, then you're not free either.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can't do things. Of course, this is safety in a particular sense of safety from drunken Negroes, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just
drunkenness. Yeah. Well, it's also, I think they're referring to the fact that this liquor that was being sold now was so deleterious to everybody. And so, you know, it was a public safety concern.
But you see, the thing is, a libertarian can use the argument it's your own choice to imbibe or not imbibe, and therefore you bear the consequences yourself. But if Negroes are getting drunk on cheap booze and committing crimes, that's not your choice. That's creating a dangerous environment for you.
Right.
Without your consent at all. Right?
So I figured you'd choose public safety too. I mean, it seems pretty clear.
In terms of the norms of world politics, I think that the United States is way over on the side of individual liberty and even too much on that side.
Yeah, it has. It has been. It has been more than almost any other place in the world. Yeah.
It cannot be contended that every believer in prohibition is a crank. Nor can it be contended that every believer in personal liberty is a drunkard or a liquor guzzler. Each of them stands for a principle that is a principle of right. But the prohibitionist has been able to command victory over the personal liberty advocate because the stuff that the prohibitionist is against ought not to be sold nor used under any circumstances. Whereas the stuff the personal liberty advocate thinks he favors is not the stuff he thinks it is at all. If the element in question were poisoned toothpaste or opium or any other conceitedly dangerous substance, both the prohibitionist and the personal liberty advocate would agree. What the honest personal liberty advocate needs to learn is that the liquor which caused the adoption of prohibition was most dangerous to the individual and society. The question was not one of liberty, but of safety. Well, you see, the thing is, we have people today that are doctrinaire libertarians who will not agree to this.
Yeah, Holly, that's true.
Yeah, and note well the prominence of Jews in libertarianism.
Yes,
promoting
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Ayn Rand and this Rothbard.
Well, they want that kind of a society. I mean, that's something that is very clear and can be argued very effectively.
So it's a society where they can get away with their shenanigans is what it is.
Yeah.
It is scarcely to be hoped that all the personal liberty groups will come to agree with this, because most of them are formed of the very men who made and profited by the drugged and chemicalized substances which were sold over the bar and in bottles. Liquor men themselves must agree with the facts. Even Bonfort's Wine and Spirits Circular admitted years ago that the bulk of spirits sold in glass under well-known brands is not what it is represented to be. The truth of the matter is, we dislike to say it,
The wine and spirit trade of this country is honeycombed with fraud, and the most radical measure should be applied, and applied vigorously. Many a dealer prominent socially, morally, religiously, and in philanthropic circles will take a lot of neutral spirits, only a few days old, flavor them with a little heavy-bodied whiskey, and brand them on the label or glass with the name of any state or country desired, and with any age, and this he will do with all smiles and glee, and inward delight that is said to characterize the bold buccaneer when he cuts a throat and scuttles a ship. These excerpts show how near the official publications of the liquor trade could come to describing the practice and indicating the Jew. The last quotation was a direct hit at Louisville liquor Jews, one of which compounders furnished a room at the YMCA of that city, another of whom adorned the town with public gifts, all of whom are Kentucky colonels, though their ancestry is not exactly Kentuckian nor even American. By the way, Jews were very prominent as pirates in the age of piracy.
So okay.
That comparison is a bit of an illusion right there. I believe I learned at some point that Jean Lafitte, the privateer, was a Jew.
Really? You know, now that's one thing I wouldn't imagine that Jews would be bold buccaneers. But I guess, you know, since that was actually a criminal organization going on, pirating, I guess they were attracted to it. I didn't know that they were people who went out on the sea, though. I can't quite picture most Jews being seamen.
Well, you have to go on the sea to be a slave trader.
Yes. Well, you don't actually have to be the one doing it, but probably they were plenty of time. Yeah.
The wine companies of Ohio, whose vineyards on Kelly's Island and elsewhere had built up a standard business, joined in the protest. They pointed out that counterfeit wines were flowing out of factories in Cleveland and Cincinnati, while the legitimate wine districts of Sandusky and Put-in Bay were being saddled with the stigma of poisoned goods. As all the counterfeit business was in the hands of Jews, the statement is unavoidable that the whole movement of the degradation of liquor was Jewish.
Okay, Hadding, last time when I told you that you had skipped, that, you know, there was a little skipping in your reading, I noticed it a few times, and you said,
right,
if I told you, you would have turned something off or whatever.
Okay.
It's not happening very often, but this last one, it kind of left out like two words, it seems.
Okay.
Okay.
So. All right, that might be a little better. So, as all the counterfeit business was in the hands of Jews, the statement is unavoidable that the whole movement of the degradation of liquor was Jewish. Then came Prohibition. The Constitution of the United States was amended. The amendment ratified by 45 states. The issue had been actively before the nation longer than any other issue, except the slavery question, so that the people's action on it must be regarded as deliberate. And the liquor business was legally ended. But what was the Jewish attitude toward prohibition while it was being argued before the nation? What has been the Jewish attitude toward prohibition since it has been adopted? Both questions can be answered the same way. There are, of course, Kentuckians and others who have convinced themselves that the Jewish compounders foresaw prohibition and welcomed it, because they saw that it would increase their profits 1,000%. But whatever the truth of that may be, there are no available records to support it. The Jews destroyed the business, that is true.
but whether intentionally for greater illegitimate profits, we cannot say. There are, however, records of Jewish activity during the Reform agitation. The Jews were against prohibition. Their press and pulpit were against it. Their whole influence in politics and finance were against it. They were the backbone of the entire wet propaganda, and are today. The great temperance organizations will tell you that Jews did not contribute to their work. One national prohibition organization admits a gift of $5 in many years.
I think that was so funny. The prohibition organizations were, of course, you know, asking for money like everybody, everything does. And they got one $5 contribution in several years from a Jew.
Well, that's like $100 in today's money. Come on.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But it was, they said it was only one. You're right. It is.
Will Irwin, investigating for early prohibition movement in the South for Collier's in 1909, found that the Modern Voice, a Jewish religious weekly, which is still published, was engaged in carrying the wet propaganda into the southern states. The Modern Voice lost more votes than it made for its lack of taste in printing a half-tone picture of Christ endorsed liquor traffic. I could just imagine that.
It's bad enough to have a doctor in these ads endorsing things like liquor, but they have Christ doing it. That is,
well,
that's a riot.
Not a good move for Jews to make
they
irreverent
must...
use of Jesus like that.
Not like that, no.
They had him holding up a bottle or something?
I don't know. We don't see the picture. This probably doesn't exist anymore. I'm sure it's been destroyed.
J.K. Baer, one of the editors of this Jewish paper, explained his activity in this direction by saying, "We are a Jewish weekly, and the Jews are opposed on moral grounds to prohibition."
Well, you know, I was asking myself how they could be opposed on moral grounds. But I think that the moral grounds that the Wets had were that it was an intrusion by the mainly rural Protestant ideas and ideals on the urban immigrant life of everyday life of urban immigrant people. And it was also Catholics that weren't for it too much. But, well, they wouldn't have been for it at all, I don't think. So that would be, I think, the moral grounds that the Jews used, that they were trying to force their... And good for Jews who want to force their ideas on everybody else. They thought this was immoral to force the Protestant ideal.
Yeah, I doubt that they're getting away with it in Muslim countries very much. Could be wrong about that. A Mr. Rosenthal was associated in the work. This was typical of the Jewish press everywhere. The Jewish stage was enlisted, every man and every girl, just as it is now, to deride those who protested against the destruction of the American people by counterfeit whiskey and wine. Jazz music, the movies, fake medical experts, every agency under Jewish control was mobilized to assist the fight for a continuance of the privilege of drugging the people's drink.
Uh-huh. So those fake medical experts are put forth by the Jews.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This will scarcely be denied, at least by the Jews. You know, where he's going a little bit over the top here is to imply that that the motive there was to harm the public. What they're trying to do is make a hell of a lot of money.
Well, where does he say that? I'm looking for it.
Squeeze out competition, I would say.
Where does he say that they're doing it to harm the public? He's just saying it does harm the public.
Yeah. to assist the fight of the for the continuance of the privilege of drugging the people's drink. Protested against the destruction of the American people. You see? Mm-hmm. Malice is... Of course, they also alleged malice with, you know, with the nigger gin, with the provocative images of white women on the bottle.
Well, it was. It was to make the Negro a more destructive force in society. Right. And so it's the same way as to help destroy society with this bad drink.
Well, it's consistent, certainly, with Kevin MacDonald's thesis about the Jews.
Okay.
But, you know, that they want to weaken the movement and so forth. Some Gentile fronts may feel obliged to rush to the defense of the Jews by denying it, but their work is unnecessary. Jews themselves make no bones about it. They did not favor prohibition, but they did not fear it. They knew that they would be exempt. They knew that it would bring certain illegitimate commercial advantages. They would be winners either way. Jewish luck. It is not surprising, therefore, that violation and evasion of the prohibition law has had a deep Jewish complexion from the very beginning. The Dearborn Independent would be glad to be excused from making the raw statement that bootlegging is a 95% controlled Jewish industry in which a certain class of rabbis have been active. We, therefore, avail ourselves of the report of an address of Rabbi Leo M. Franklin of Detroit, president of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, as given before that body at Washington in April 1921, confirming the general fact. Oh, shoot. Page went too high there. In making the recommendation I gave you in my message in regard to this matter, and in going to the extreme in suggesting that we appeal to the government to rescind that part of the prohibition law which gives rabbis permission to issue permits for the purchase and distribution of wine for ritual purposes, I did, after very mature consideration. I am sure that after my successor shall have been in the chair of the conference for any length of time, he will come to exactly the same conclusions as I did. You gentlemen, members of the conference, who have dealt with this situation as a local question, have had, here and there, some small question to solve. But when you become president of the conference and have letters from every part of the country, almost day by day, asking you as president of the conference to give the necessary authority to call to all sorts of men in all sorts of conditions to purchase and distribute wine for ritual purposes, then you will take a different angle on this whole situation. I pointed out to one of my colleagues, next to whom I was just now sitting, that within the past month, I have received requests from three different men calling themselves rabbis in their communities for authorization to purchase and distribute wine. I know that I am not exaggerating when I say that during this last year, I received requests from not less than 150 men in all parts of the country for permits to distribute wine. I had the applicants investigated, and I may say to you that in 9 cases out of 10, we found those who were attempting to use this conference through its executive officers for the obtaining of this authority were men who had not the slightest right to stand before their communities as rabbis. What were they, for the most part?
They were men without the slightest pretense at rabbinical training or position who, for the purpose of getting into the wholesale liquor business, if you will, organized congregations. Nothing on God's earth could prevent them from doing so. They simply gathered around them little companies of men. They called them congregations. And then, under the law as it now exists, they were privileged to purchase and distribute wine to these people. And I call your attention to the fact that many of the so-called members of these congregations were not members of one congregation only. This is not a laughing matter. They were not only members of one congregation, but members of two, three, four, and upward. Why don't you know why you... Why, you don't know what good Jews many have become since this law has gone into effect. What is more, gentlemen, perhaps some of you don't realize what popularity has come to the sermon and how many Jews have suddenly come to realize the beauty and the duty of the Kiddush on Friday night. I tell you, it is a mighty serious problem, and say what you will, our conference, under present conditions, is being used as a medium by unscrupulous men, by the dozens and by the hundreds, to carry on a bootlegging business in the name of religion. Now, you say there have been just small scandals here and there. A wine company in New York was raided last week, and $250,000 worth of wine was taken away by the authorities. Supposed to be for ritual purposes. Don't forget that rabbi after rabbi last week in New York, a few of whom I happen to know, and in Rochester, Buffalo, Flint, Michigan, and Port Huron, Michigan, in any number of small towns throughout the country, if you have read your papers carefully, you will find that rabbi so-and-so has been arrested as a bootlegger.
Well, sure. What's new about that? Funny.
The discussion of this subject by the other rabbis present was very interesting. There was a request that personal experiences be debarred, but some crept in. Rabbi Cohen, for example, was quite explicit. Being one of those who opposed the whole prohibition law, I am not in sympathy with the whole prohibition law. It seems to me that we rabbis ought not to stand in the way of our own members in their legitimate ways of getting wine for their homes. If a member wants the wine, I would like to be in a position that he may have the wine, even though he may not absolutely have to have it. Rabbi Cohen pronounced the typical Jewish view. If the fool Gentiles want to prohibit themselves from having liquor, let them do it. But if there is a loophole for the Jews, such as a rabbinical permit offers, it should be used generously for any member, even though he may not absolutely have to have it.
Well, that's very revealing, isn't it? It shows how they see themselves as separate from the Gentiles. Their community is separate. And they can even have separate rules and laws, even when it comes to the laws of the country. They don't have to follow Gentile laws if they don't want to. That's what the guy's actually saying. He's just talking about drinking, but, you know, it goes on to things more serious than that.
Well, it also has implications regarding the fact that so many Jews become lawyers. Because they don't look at our law in terms of the spirit of the law and what it intends. They look at it as an obstacle course to get around.
Very good. Yes, that's true. And that's it. That just goes along with the thing that they're separate. They're different. They're They don't feel that they're a part of our community. If they did, they wouldn't be doing, they wouldn't be talking like this even, you know. So, if something works for them, it's great. They like it. Like the, you know, liberty for everyone. If something doesn't work for them, they think they can ignore it. Well, what's good for the Jews, right?
Yep.
That's the rule.
The pre-prohibition Jewish liquor business is also the post-prohibition Jewish liquor business. That fact is established by mountainous evidence. This does not mean, of course, that every bootlegger you meet is a Jew, nor that you will ever meet a Jew serving as an itinerant bootlegger. Unless you live in Chicago, New York, or other large cities, an actual meeting with the Jew in this minor capacity will not be frequent. The Jew is the possessor of the wholesale stocks. He is the director of the underground railways that convey the stuff surreptitiously to the public. Seldom does he risk his own safety in being the last man to hand the goods to the consumer and to take the money. It's the same way with drug traffic.
Mm-hmm. It would be.
Drug traffic today. Like, supposedly ecstasy is a big Jewish thing. Supposedly a lot of Jewish involvement in drug trafficking. But that's not who sells it on the street corner.
Right.
But notwithstanding all this carefulness, the bulk of the arrests made in the United States have been among Jews. The bulk of the liquor permits, a guess of 95% would not be too high, are in the hands of Jews.
Wow.
More and more, the Jews are being appointed as prohibition enforcement officers at the central points of distribution. Well, that's very interesting there. Because what they can do then basically is enforce the Jewish monopoly.
Well, yeah. See, why are they allowed to get in there like that? That's like when they were saying that most of the immigration officers were Jewish. Good grief, you know, deciding, you know, I mean, helping to facilitate the immigration of more Jews to whatever extent they were able to.
And you know, it was a Jewish IRS agent that brought down Al Capone for tax evasion. And, you know, of course he was involved in liquor trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they make such a big deal about they pay so much attention to hillbilly bootleggers as if that were, you know, the source of the trouble.
Yeah, right. And of course, you know, everybody connects Al Capone with Prohibition. And, you know, he's the one who's making all the money. And nobody mentions Jews. You know, I looked over the whole page on Prohibition at Wikipedia today. And the Jew word was never used. Not one.
Oh, sure. Not on Wikipedia. No.
No. And the same thing, I was looking at something else. What was it about? But again, we're, you know, full of Jews, but not never. Oh yeah, in the same thing in finance. You read any of these financial writers or something, you know, and, you might think, you know, some of them are pretty good, but they, you know, they're talking about Jews. They know they're Jews, but they never mention the word Jew. It would be destruction for them if they did. It's terrible.
It is a fact. As Rabbi Franklin showed, that part of the trouble arises over the abuse of what has been called rabbinical wine. But big as it seems by itself, it is really a small part in comparison with the whole. Numbers of lesser rabbis have profited from the sale of liquor, no doubt of that. And not only among their own people, but from any people making the demand. If you sign a Jewish name, you can get it, is the watchword. Newspaper offices have been kept wet in some cases by rabbinical wine, which accounts for the dribble of wet propaganda in the so-called humorous and other columns of the evening journals. Well, you know, that's actually quite normal there, whenever anything is prohibited that people have a hankering for anyway, it's going to become a matter of humor.
Yeah.
You know, whatever is prohibited, if you know, if you have too much, I mean, the fact of that is that the looser society becomes, the harder it is to find material for humor because people don't have any hang-ups anymore.
Yeah, true. But the Jews make the most of that. They do. And so many of the comics and humor people were also Jews because they're running your show business.
Yeah, you can make the argument, though, definitely, that running a lot of prohibition-related humor, you know, kind of winking at alcohol use and so forth, is subversive. You can certainly do that. Humor has been recognized as having potentially terrible subversive qualities since ancient Athens. It was Aristophanes' comedy, The Clouds, which contributed enormously to the unjust conviction of Socrates. People repeated claims made in jest in this comedy as if they were factual about Socrates.
So those Greek people weren't so brilliant. They're falling for all this stuff and doing the same thing we do today.
Well, this is the problem of democracy. You have a lot of people... I know democracy, everybody's expected to have an opinion about everything, but the vast majority of people are not in a position to have an informed opinion about very much. So you end up with a lot of things going awry, and they have to rely on the mass media, basically, as Rush Limbaugh says, to tell them what to think.
Yeah, well, that's not new.
It happens that rabbinical wine is a euphemism for whiskey, gin, scotch, champagne, vermouth, absinthe, or any other kind of hard liquor. The stocks that existed when prohibition went into force have not only not decreased, but have actually increased because of the increase in the doctoring of the stuff. It has been cheapened. Its bulk has been increased, and it has been made, if anything, more deadly than before. As fatal as bootleg whiskey is a saying founded on thousands of deaths. And there are plenty of analogs to that in the illegal drug trade. There are a few, anyway. Let's see, there's crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. As a cheaper form of cocaine that can be sold to Negroes. I'm not sure what the involvement of Jews in the development of crack cocaine was, but I would... It's a hypothesis worth investigating. Mm-hmm. And there's a new drug. It's a form of desomorphine called crocodile, which is people are taking as a substitute for heroin. And that stuff, the person that starts using that stuff typically dies in 3 years.
You know, it just amazes me that people are so, I don't know what, you know, so lost in their life that they even start on this stuff, that they take this stuff. You know, somebody, anything that's around, here, you want something? You sure? You know, and in it goes. I mean... just really, really wild. But that again comes to the problem of why we're in the shape we're in, and why we're so just in more, not that far gone, but just so easily manipulated by. Well, like they show some pictures on this prohibition page at Wikipedia, and there, as soon as the prohibition law was, well, they probably posed these things, but they had these young girls standing at a bar sucking on a beer bottle with some older men in some southern town somewhere, you know, celebrating, I guess. I don't know. And, well, they had some other pictures, too, but just like, why do these people do this stuff? Why do they think they're having fun doing that? Why do they... But I know when you're young, you want new experiences and you want to do what older people are doing. And so it's understandable at that stage, but really.
Well, you know, of course, there's a genetic component in alcoholism.
Yeah.
Addictive behavior. A lot of people have, you know, pain in their lives, and the sedating effect is it makes the pain go away for a while.
Yeah,
I was going to say about this crocodile stuff. That came out of Russia, and it's now reached the United States. The probability that it was Jews that brought it from Russia to the United States is extremely high.
I would say so if it came from there. Yeah.
Yeah. It basically, the problem is the intersection of the profit motive with not really caring at all about the consequences of how you get that profit. And also the fact that the whole trade is illegal and it's being conducted in spite of being illegal, which means that it's not regulated at all. So that's what's happening with the illegal drug trade currently.
That's the thing, though, about these white people. They don't give a damn about their own life. You know, they don't see their life or what they are or what they have. That's why if we had racial pride and if we didn't have all this mixed, you know, the whole thing. I just get tired of saying the same words again. But you know, if we've been mixed for a long time in our societies and so on, and we've had Jews there for a long time, that's for sure. And you know, if people saw themselves as valuable and having a valuable, you know, contribution to make and so on, they wouldn't be so ready to throw their life away for some little feel good moments.
Well, yeah, they're living in the moment. They're not thinking about what's going to happen in the long term as a result of what they're doing right now. They just want to feel good right now.
Right. I'm familiar with that. When I was young at times, you know, I'm very familiar with thinking that way. But, you know, hopefully you can grow out of it or something. You're lucky. Some luck comes along, keeps you from going all the way down the tubes.
The ability to defer gratification certainly increases with age.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you see, the thing is, young people today are out from under the guidance of older people.
Yes. Yeah, well, our society is totally, but it's the Jews that have engineered all this. So we're just really, anything goes and nobody cares, and that's supposed to be really cool. So, well, let's go on so we don't not get done here.
The wholesale stocks of compounded liquor remained in the hands of the men who owned them, while the retail stocks in stores and saloons had to be disposed of. That was one of the big mistakes, that the little fellow was compelled to get rid of his stock while the big fellow was permitted to keep his. The so-called rabbis, who had advance information of the special privileges which the Jews were to enjoy under the prohibition law, were very active in buying up the smaller stocks and storing them away. Of course, no one could prevent them. Was it not ritual wine? Even though it was any kind of liquor, it went under the cover name of ritual wine. And of course, as everybody knows, great scandal resulted. Protests like that of Rabbi Franklin indicate that a part of Jewish public opinion resents the policy of exempting Jews from the prohibition law. But this is minority opinion. What
Central Conference of American Rabbis may think is of little consequence to the mass of Jews in America. The people to scrutinize with regard to this are not the Rabbi Franklins, who are amenable to the significance of American opinion, but those Jews who do not consult with Americanized rabbis, but run the political end of Jewry as they choose. There is no reason why the Jews should be exempt from the operation of the Constitution of the United States at all. Yet, the Constitution is suspended in their favor when the 10-gallon permit is given. But it would be a great mistake to suppose that there is or could be any objection to the Jews' ritualistic use of wine, or that the present scandal with regard to law violation arises from that. It is not a religious question at all. It is purely a commercial question. The people who are breaking the prohibition law are the same people who broke the pure food law with regard to the ingredients of whiskey. They are essentially a law-breaking class. Oops. Wait a second, I've lost my position here.
The Gentile boobs. Here's there. He's bringing up the boobs, the Gentile boobs, several times here, in what's coming.
Okay, yeah. But I see, I clicked the wrong place on my PDF reader, and it skipped a page, yeah. So I had to go back. Okay. The Gentile boobs who patronize bootleggers today are being sold a liquor which is never what it is represented to be. In spite of names blown in the bottles, in spite of seals, and in spite of labels. The most conscienceless fraud is being perpetrated on gullible people at an increase in profit of from 400% to 1,000%. The stuff brought from Havana is Jew whiskey shipped there, doctored still more, and shipped back at increased prices. The Gentile boobs, fancying that they are getting something extra special, just brought in from Havana. Twenty years ago, Jewish liquor dealers of Chicago, by the way, there were a lot of Jews in Cuba back then, and some of them are here now. 20 years ago, Jewish liquor dealers of Chicago were using genuine James E. Pepper bottles, refilled with vile ingredients compounded in back rooms. 20 years ago, there were counterfeit whiskeys sold in the United States bearing forged Canadian government stamps. The forgers of the labels were Jewish liquor houses. 20 years ago, there was unlimited faking of liquor labels, a Chicago printing house furnishing Jewish liquor houses with clever imitations of any reputable label in use to be placed on bottles containing doped goods. Foreign, American, and Canadian labels were unscrupulously adopted and brazenly advertised everywhere. These abuses did not wait for prohibition. They were daily Jewish practices 20 years ago. The only difference now is that the stuff which is sold is still worse. The enforcement of the prohibition law ought to be rigidly complete, for the same reason that the enforcement of the pure food law should have been complete years ago. It is necessary to prevent the wholesale harming of an ignorant public. The maintenance of the idea of drink in the minds of the people is due to Jewish propaganda. There is not a dialogue on the stage today does not drip with whiskey patter. As all the plays making much noise this year are not only Jew-written, Jew-produced, and Jew-controlled, but also Jew-played, the stage swarms with Jewish countenances this year. The drip of whiskey patter is constant. If theatergoers were at all observant, they would see that most of their money goes to support pro-Jewish propaganda in one form or another, which is, of course, a tribute to Jewish business genius. What other people could embark on a pro-racial propaganda and make the opposite race pay for it? This idea of drink will be maintained by means of Jewish stage, Jewish jazz, and the Jewish comics, until somebody comes down hard upon it as being incentive of treason to the Constitution.
Yeah, I read on that Wikipedia page today that, no, I looked at a page on speakeasies, and there was some comment there that jazz became more popular, really picked up because of these speakeasies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people, I guess, looking for their buzz had to go to a Jewish establishment, I suppose, very often. And they would hear that music there, probably. Mm-hmm. When a Jewish comedian can indulge in a 15-minute monologue panning the United States, defaming liberty, heaping contempt upon the pilgrims, and openly praising a violation of a portion of the Constitution of the United States, and when choruses sing this sort of thing, and slapstick artists take it up, and it becomes evident that the country is being ringed around every week by repeated attacks upon what the people have established, it is certain not to be very long before a heavy hand will be laid on the whole business. Well, that didn't really happen.
Yeah, a lot of things they always thought were going to happen didn't happen. Now, we think nothing today of making fun of violating the Constitution or making fun of the pilgrims or, you know, just any of this stuff that people used to take
more seriously. Sarah Silverman, right?
Yeah. But, you know, but when it comes to making light of the Holocaust or something that's special to Jews, they go nuts over it. So there again, they hold totally different standards for themselves than for others, and we let them get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Holocaust jokes are something that really need to be developed. We need lots of Holocaust jokes.
We need more Gentile comedians to do it.
Yeah. The Department of Justice should pay some attention to the treason nightly spouted on the legitimate stage before Americans who pay as high as $5 each in support of the propaganda. Oh, wait, I misread that. The Department of Justice should pay some attention to the treason nightly spouted on the legitimate stage before Americans, who pay as high as $5 each in support of propaganda. First and last, the illicit... I don't know why I said that. First and last, that's how it would be pronounced in Latin. First and last, the illicit liquor business, in all its phases, both before and after Prohibition, has always been Jewish. Before Prohibition, it was morally illicit. After Prohibition, it became both morally and legally illicit. And it is not a cause for shame among the majority of Jews, sad to say. It is rather a cause for boast. The Yiddish newspapers are fruitful of jocular references to the fact. And they even carry large wine company advertisements week after week. As before Prohibition, the key to the steady degeneration of the liquor business was the fact of Jewish domination. And so now, the key to the organized and lawless rebellion against a recently enacted article of the Constitution is also Jewish. Prohibition enforcement officers will find a shortcut to successful enforcement along this line. And if law-abiding Jews would help with what they know, the work could soon be accomplished.
Law-abiding Jews.
they've always got their telescope out looking for those good Jews.
You're so right, they are. Okay, so what was the date of this one, Hattie?
Okay, it looks like December 31st, 1921.
Well, this is the last one of the year, 1921. They ended with the liquor story. Well, there's I've got a lot of little red notes here that I didn't bring up. While I'm looking through here to see if there's anything else to say, you can say anything if you want to.
Well, I think he got to the core of the problem, the real core of the problem, when he talked about the Jewish domination of the entertainment and what amounted to mass media at the time.
The core of the problem?
Yeah. Yeah, because entertainment in particular, I mean, news is one thing. I mean, people make decisions based on news, but entertainment really shapes people's fundamental attitudes. It affects how they think. People get moral principles from Star Trek, right?
Yes.
They do.
It's like church.
Star Trek is a completely Jewish show. It's the whole idea of it is Jewish.
And think how popular it was. So our people just love all that Jewish stuff. They just love it. Can't get enough of it.
But it's, you know, Star Trek passed for a kind of a thinking man's, you know, drama, sort of. People thought it was intelligent.
Yeah. Well, here's something. I agree with you totally about that entertainment. And why do you think Jews decided to take over entertainment? They knew that. They know where the society's beliefs are formed, and that's where exactly what they're most interested in controlling. Apart from the money thing, which is something, you know, kind of on its own. But here I found out that the federal income tax replaced the alcohol taxes. That funded the federal government. So when they went to prohibition, they weren't getting any more alcohol taxes. Of course, the federal income tax started before that, but they may have increased it. You know, of course, it's always been increased and increased and increased over the years. So we used to have these get taxes as we know from things, not necessarily just alcohol, but things, you know, that were sold, tariffs in all kinds of ways. And then they decided that they needed to have an income tax. There's no reason for a federal income tax in this country.
Well, it's been enacted primarily during wartime, but the effect is to make the federal government more powerful relative to the states. That's what it's done.
Okay, well, we have to stop there. We're going to hear our music any second now, so thanks for listening once again, ladies and gentlemen. And good night from Hattie and I.
Hattie and me.
Hattie and me, that's right.
Hooray, Jake, hooray, John, breaking up drinks all night long.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.